we present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the BBC Sport website read by Zeb Soans.
David Beckham also revealed that his sons Brooklyn, 13, Romeo, 10 and Crew, 7, will stay in London to go to school, along with his wife Victoria, 38, and their one-year-old daughter Harper.
And our thanks to everyone who sent that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and writer and comedian Katie Brand. And opposite them on my left, executive editor of The Times, Daniel Finkelstein and Mark Steele.
I thought you were coming to me first then, and I thought, am I executive editor of The Times?
If you get enough points, I'll let you do it for a day. How about that?
Oh, do you know, you're so going to win, Mark. You are so...
You can have my points if you want.
That's going to cause a few heart attacks in Hertfordshire, isn't it? What? They should do what to the Queen? This is an unexpected turn of events in the editorial.
Anyway, shall we start in the traditional manner with a question? Jeremy, whose wedding party split the party?
Well, this is it's good news week because our socially liberal government has corrected an anomaly in the law and brought in the Equal Marriage Act. And obviously, one doesn't want to get involved in name-calling, and some people's objections to gay marriage are based on deeply held religious bigotry. But frankly, all of the arguments that have been put forward against it are just unsustainable tosh, because, you know, before the debate, all these mainly Tory, not exclusively Tory, there were also Labour and Liberal people, and of course Democratic Unionists who opposed it, but people were standing up and saying, marriage is between a man and a woman. I thought, not anymore, princess, it's changed. That's the thing with the law, you see, the law is one thing, then it changes, and it's something else. And then, of course, there's the arguments of, well, what next? Nothing next, that's it. Well, what next? Will a man be able to marry his brother? No, no. When Catholics were first allowed to stand to Parliament, it didn't then change so that furniture could stand upon. When the franchise was extended to women, it wasn't then extended to sandwiches or carpets. It doesn't work like that. They've just changed the law to make it equal for gay and straight people, and that's all there is to it. But there's this huge fixation with other people's private parts. I was listening to Charles Moore. Charles Moore, who used to edit The Telegraph, was being interviewed, and I thought, if you didn't have a public school accent, if you sounded like a cab driver, they wouldn't be bothering with you. You'd have to phone up any answers with all the rest of the personality disorders. So only because you're posh. He was saying,
marriage is about a procreative act, which is sanctified by blah, 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 and there is no law, there is no definition of adultery. And I thought, oh, right, so there's no definition of what adultery is if you're gay. So what's the definition of adultery if you're straight? And I looked it up, and it's only, adultery is only all the way. Five bases. It has to be the whole schmear. So basically, you can do a lot, and it's not adultery.
The funny thing is that a proportion of the MPs that voted no, the ones sort of harumphing about how it'll all sort of destroy the principle of marriage and bring it into disrepute, have had several divorces themselves.
As if that's just practice.
Yeah.
Marriage hadn't changed for thousands of years, and you think, oh, yes, that's why there were so many divorces and prenup agreements in the medieval period.
But there are some people rather curmudgeonly saying, yeah, well, why would gays even want to get married? And it is, in fairness, Cameron is trying to save the institution of marriage, which not many people are interested in. He's hoping that gays will do for marriage what they did for musical theatre. But people are saying, well, why would you want to get married? I think, well, that's not the point. If you say that somebody can't do something, then they will say, well, why can't I? Think, why would you want to put butter in a peanut butter sandwich? I think that's just weird.
We don't want law... Do we have to hear about your perversion?
No, but what I'm saying, if the law was such that gay people or black people or women or Jewish people or Catholics were not allowed to put peanut butter in a peanut butter sandwich, then I would say they should have every right, whether or not it's an abomination.
Quite a lot of people have written to me because The Times has come out in favour of gay marriage and they've said, you're sticking with the biblical version of marriage, and I've sort of said, well, my wife won't let me take a concubine, so I can't. I think the idea, though, Jeremy, is to make everyone as happy as Chris Hughne and his wife.
Mm. Yeah. The whole thing is they've been unable to define what constitutes consummation of a same-sex union, and I can help them with this. It's when you, for women anyway, it's when you put your power tools in the same toolbox, and that's it. It's,
these people who are talking about it has to be consummated and therefore a gay marriage can't be a proper marriage, all the people who are heterosexuals who get married, that has to be consummated for those people to consider it a marriage.
Yeah. But the original.
So do we have to send in a tape to the person at the... at the town hall, and they go, oh, yeah, there's another one, tick that, or, oh, blimey, he's, that's not quite in, I'm afraid that don't...
when they say, when the priest or the vicar says, you may kiss the bride, that's when you're supposed to do it, then.
Oh.
We've so gone beyond my knowledge here. Can anybody do a diagram?
My favourite quote in all of this was the complaint that everything now had to be seen through the merciless prism of equality.
I like the bishop who said that he thought gay people had enough equality.
Next thing, they'll be releasing the slaves.
It is a funny old week where I have to take my hat off to David Cameron and say, jolly well done for sticking to your principles. And I sort of felt a bit confused this week. I don't know what will happen next. Maybe Ed Miliband will actually do something. I don't know. Extremely confused. Can I just say, because we're now under by-election, strictly speaking. OK, the by-election rules of broadcasting start this week because of the by-election in Eastleigh. So I'm going to give 2 points if anybody can find a reason of any kind to mention Ed Miliband. Now, I know he hasn't really done anything, but nevertheless, if you can find a reason...
He has done one thing.
Oh, go on then, because I'll give you 2 points for it.
He has emailed all the membership of the Labour Party to see if anyone wants to stand in Eastleigh as the Labour candidate. I actually considered joining the Labour Party today just for a laugh so I could stand for the candidacy in Eastleigh.
The Commons have voted in favour of legalising gay marriage, or marriage, as I call it. MPs voted overwhelmingly in favour of equal marriage by 400 votes to 175, although 43 MPs preferred to stay in the closet. David Cameron didn't actually attend the debate as he was busy organising his divorce from Nick Clegg. Ed Miliband made a vital contribution to the debate. He said it was a proud day. I bet he was up all night working on that. And the bill is not yet passed. It still has to go to the Lords, where it will be voted on by men in dresses. 2 points to Jeremy. Katie, who's had to e-backtrack?
Who's had to e-backtrack? Sorry, I've been on eBay all day, so I just trying to buy an education. I assume this is to do with the English baccalaureate.
It is.
And the fetus in a jar that is Michael Gove.
Do you know what?
There's some teachers in.
Yeah. He always reminds me, Katie, he reminds me of a sort of mythical woodland creature.
Yes.
Who bounds through the forest saying he's had a wonderful idea, and all the other creatures in the woodland go, oh, comes Michael. So, anyway, I was thinking about him, because he comes up a lot on the show. He is the politician who just keeps on giving to satire, and... So, tell me what you think about this. I've been trying to think of a leitmotif for him, a sort of a musical theme. Mm. See if you like this.
Yes, that's nice.
What do you think, people? Shall we have that? Yes, it's not good, isn't it? Well, please, well.
I imagine Michael Gove posing in front of his bedroom mirror, imagining himself to be one of the great Victorian reformers. He doesn't really care what happens now. What he cares about is what people think of him in 150 years' time. And so he sort of keeps trying to push through these huge, dramatic educational reforms. And one of those was to replace GCSEs with the English baccalaureate. No one quite understood what that was. And now a couple of regulators have said no, so he's just said, OK. And he's changed his mind, but he said he hasn't really changed his mind, so it's going to be kind of like the English baccalaureate. It's just it's still going to be called GCSEs.
But it was so brilliantly grovelling, if you heard it on the radio. It was, I realise now that I have made a mistake. It was like something that you would imagine from the Chinese Communist Party in the 60s. It has become clear to me that I am a fool, a buffoon, an idiot. That's how I was hearing it anyway. And I thought... And I thought, it should go further. It should have to go further. Yes, but that's not enough. What else are you? I am the possessor of a face that makes even the most pacifist of creatures reach for the shovel in anticipation of reshaping it.
He did say some very odd things, though, because he said that under the current leadership, Labour want to be the Downton Abbey party when it comes to educational opportunity. I don't know what that means. What does it mean? The children would love their first year at school, have a disappointing second year, and things would pick up in the third when Shirley MacLaine turns up. I don't know what it's done. I almost felt sorry for him.
Well,
I imagine it's times like this he reaches for the King James Bible and looks for guidance in the foreword that he wrote.
Basically, politicians will do anything to avoid having to U-turn on anything, however stupid the original thing was. I was involved in getting a chicken to follow Tony Blair around in the 1997 general election, and halfway through the election, we became worried that the chicken would defect to the Labour Party. So my job for the rest of the election, despite the fact that I was director of policy, was to follow the chicken around, as he followed Tony Blair, to ensure that the chicken didn't join the Labour Party. And although we lost in a landslide, I can tell you, he didn't.
Was it a real chicken?
No, it was an actor in a chicken suit, Jeremy.
During this time, were you dressed as an egg? Was there a constant debate about who was going to get there
very
first?
Good.
The tragic thing about Michael Gove is that not all of his ideas are awful. It's just that... There's nothing intrinsically wrong with wanting the children of this country to have an education that will stand up to the kind of education that children in other countries might be having. It's just that nobody likes him, so he needs to sort of whisper...
You like him.
Oh, you like him.
Gove is a friend of mine.
Oh, okay. How lovely. I'm so glad he's got one. And
what do you like about him, Danny?
He's charming, he's funny, he's intelligent. And he's trying to do something about the education system. There you go. Shall I keep going?
Am I
drowning enough?
No, it's great. I mean, we'd love to hear the other side because it's rarely put. So what went wrong with this? Because it clearly hasn't gone as well as he had hoped.
I think he basically went too far and the Liberal Democrats wouldn't support him and he couldn't get it done in time.
So it's the Lib Dems' fault?
It's a little bit that.
I hate when that happens.
Right from the beginning, he didn't have them behind him, so he couldn't press on with it.
But it does feel at the moment, Daniel, that government policies are a bit like buses. You wait for ages for one, and then it doesn't turn up because it's done a U-turn. Do you know what I mean? There just seem to be quite a lot of U-turns.
But I'd rather they did that, I think, than press on with stupid things.
How about not coming up with the stupid things in the first place? So, Daniel, why do you think that Mr. Gove, he does get very bad press, and I mean, what's going wrong for him? I'm curious to know.
He does a lot of controversial things that people don't like.
Right.
Otherwise, if you left everything alone, basically, in life, you'd be very popular. You just let everything slowly decline. If you do something, you're always taking a risk, aren't you? So I think he takes more risks than others. And there are some people in the world who like what Michael's doing, of which I'm one.
Good. Well, great. Just trying to be balanced. It's a fascinating by-election in Eastleigh. I don't know if anybody knows. Education Secretary Michael Gove has been forced to abandon his plans to replace GCSEs with English baccalaureate exams whilst his planned reforms of exam boards were ruled illegal under EU law. Shadow Education Secretary Stephen Twigg said Gove's announcement was a humiliating climb down and a total shambles, thus earning Twigg a C grade in the hyperbole module of his English language GCSE. Gove's plans to scrap GCSEs faced opposition from the exam watchdog Ofqual, the Commons Education Committee, the Head Teachers Association, the National Union of Teachers, the arts community and leading technology companies. Still, as Daniel has pointed out, what do they know? It's my show, Daniel. Get used to it. Now,
since they've been allowed to marry, they've got feisty, haven't they?
Gove bizarrely accused Labour of being the Downton Abbey party who wanted to keep working-class children in their place. Ed Miliband responded by blinking twice and asking where the toilet was. 2 points to Katie. Daniel, listen to this. Daniel, who admitted speeding towards disaster this week?
Can I guess? Chris Huhne pleaded guilty to arranging for his speeding points to be taken by his wife in order to avoid losing his licence. As far as I understand it, he didn't want to lose his licence because he wanted to be the Liberal Democrat candidate for Eastleigh, which probably makes him the first person to risk prison in order not to be late for a Liberal Democrat committee meeting. which is quite brave of him. I did start a leader on this with the words, and I didn't know what I was doing at the time. Chris Huhne is the sort of politician who takes no prisoners. And I thought maybe that wasn't actually very appropriate. Well, it was better that the speech that I once did that said that Gordon Brown's speech had one eye on the premiership, I had to do.
Yeah. Do you know if you type the word Huhne into your computer, the spell check wants to change it to huh?
Will he be going to the big house for that, then?
Well, the maximum sentence for perverting the course of justice is life imprisonment, but I'm sure he can find somebody to do it for him.
An intern. An
intern. Oh. You feel sorry for him? Because I mean, usually when people sort of in quite high positions fall on hard times, they have to go and get a job as a cabbie, but he can't even do that, can he?
So the thing, you could understand a Lib Dem speeding nowadays, you know, to get away from hordes of angry voters, but I mean, this was 2003. Nobody have known who you are.
I think Nick Clegg told Chris Huhne that they were worried the party would be seen as not having any convictions, but I think he went to...
Some fascinating facts came out. Apparently, he spent £600 on an iPad just before he quit as an MP, and he can't help but think he must have had his fair share of angry birds at home already, so it's...
The original issue isn't really the speeding points, is it?
It's the fact that he said he didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, exactly.
It was the speeding points. If he'd ever said at any point that he took the speeding points, he'd have still had to resign his seat, he'd still had to resign from the cabinet, he'd still go to jail.
But there'd be no kind of public desire to see someone go to prison for sharing speeding points.
There wouldn't be
a kind of a mood in the nation.
Is that true? Is that everybody who cheats on speeding points?
Basically, yes. It's because the chances of getting caught is so low. If you multiply by that by the sentence, it's got to be a real deterrent. If you do get caught, you end up going to jail.
What a mad country. If you get into government partly by promising that you are going to scrap tuition fees and then afterwards say, oh, sorry, I lied, we're going to treble them instead, you get away with it. But if you'd say that you weren't driving the car your wife was, that's when you can get banged up in jail.
Pretty much.
And what's the point in getting into government if you can't retrospectively change the law? I mean, that's what Berlusconi does. You know, he just says, the mafia is now not illegal. Mussolini was not a dictator.
And you are 18 years old.
I did a driving awareness course the other day.
Had you not been aware of driving up until then?
Well, they used to call it a speed awareness course, and then they got people turning up for the wrong reason. A lot of clubbers would turn up there. They just make you feel really, really depressed and talk to you about all the horrible things that happen if you drive too fast and keep you there for several hours and make you late for the next appointment, which means you then get in your car and drive like buggery to get there. But no, it's very interesting. There's a very nice police officer called Jim, who's a big fan of the news quiz. So they're good, the police. They're good, the police. They're not a reactionary, oppressive arm of the ruling class. They're good and they're helpful.
Lib Dem MP Chris Huhne has resigned from politics to spend more time with prisoners. He pleaded guilty in court to perverting the course of justice by dodging a speeding penalty 10 years ago. 2 years ago, the Sunday Times broke the story that Huhne had, in 2003, allegedly coerced his ex-wife, Vicky Price, into taking his speeding points. What do points make?
Price!
No, minimum sentence of 4 months. Maximum sentence of life imprisonment. Ed Miliband quickly made political capital out of the situation by going to the shops and buying a Cadbury's cream egg. At 2 points to Daniel. Mark.
Is Miliband still the leader of the Labour Party?
I have no idea what he's up to. But I am honestly doing my best. Mark, who hadn't banked on getting caught in a fix?
Ah, right, this will be the football teams.
No, but if you've got an interesting story about football that you'd like to do in place of the LIBOR rate... probably this week I'd allow it.
England beat Brazil.
2 points.
I always think with libel, the clue's in the name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Libel.
So, lying and boring.
Yes.
This was ages ago, isn't it? Has it cropped up again this week?
Do you know, oddly, it was in all the papers today. Yeah. I hate when that happens with the news quiz.
Bank of Scotland have been fined.
Yeah,
£90 million.
I've got it now. No, I vaguely remember sort of seeing a little bit on Newsnight. The good people of the Royal Bank of Scotland, their fine name has been sullied because they were so revered throughout the nation before, and they have now been caught fiddling something called the LIBOR rate, mm-hmm. which all good, reasonable people have no idea what it works, but it's fiddled, and it was fiddled in such a way that it means that the people doing the fiddling could guarantee that the I'm sort of getting by as an economist here, aren't I?
if I explain to you, basically, I think as money comes out of your bank account every month for a loan or a mortgage, you are probably overpaying on it because someone at RBS has done a bad thing, but you can console yourself with the thought that one day you'll be dead. I don't know how... It's the best I could do, really.
They've basically been fined £90 million by the Financial Services Authority, plus £30 to send them a letter telling them they've been fined.
Can't they just get HSBC to take their points for them?
Yes. That is very, very good.
It's amazing, really. I mean, similarly with the gay weddings, people who think that nothing can change. I mean, if you'd said 20, 30 years ago, I think that gay people ought to be able to get married and the bankers are the people that are running down the country, it would have seemed like you'd been an extremist. Now, if you say to someone we should sack the bankers, they go, what? Sack them? Never mind bloody sack them. We should take their skin off slowly, smear marmalade all over them, shove them in a letterbox and hose it down full of wasps. Never mind bloody sack them.
That was Thought for the Day. With
the... Bank of Scotland has been fined £390 million for rigging the LIBOR rate even after the bank had been bailed out by the taxpayer. 81% of RBS is owned by the taxpayer, the rest by a consortium that includes the Child Catcher and Mr. Burns from The Simpsons. Ed Miliband quickly made political capital out of the situation by making the bed and alphabetising his Fleetwood Mac CDs. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Katie have got 5 points, but so too have Daniel and Mark. We start round two with a programme description from the BBC's Africa website.
Episode 6. David Attenborough comes face to face with a baby rhino and asks, what the future holds?
Thanks to Dan Craggs for sending us that. Jeremy.
What?
Jeremy.
What now, Sandra? questions. Always questions with you, isn't it? What's this? What's that? Who said that? Who said this? What happened? On and on and on. Look it up yourself.
Jeremy. Jeremy, I'm trying to make your name sound more interesting, but I can't. Jeremy, why might fathers get to share the mother load?
Well, I mean, it's been quite a nice week, really, with the government fining bankers and introducing equal marriage and suggesting that fathers have a role in bringing up children and should be equally capable of taking time off work to look after their own children as women. I mean, which is a sign, again, how times have changed, because when my daughter was little, which is a long, long time ago, if you were a man with your baby out in a buggy, and those were the days when you could get more than one buggy into a cafe, because now there's buggies and just these huge padded wheelbarrows, usually driven by women who sit in cafes all day saying, I just want my life back, I've got no time to do anything for myself. Why should not men be able to
do exactly.
That?
Now those women can go back to work and the men can do it.
We can sit in cafes all day. I'm just so tired. But, I mean, when I used to...
There are some things in childcare that men do better than women. Can I just say they are brilliant at pointing at the baby and shouting, help, help, till the mother turns up.
When I was parenting a young child, I mean, it was lovely if you were a man because women thought you were marvellous. Aren't you modern men? Oh, aren't you good? I think, no, I'm just taking my daughter around with me because I'm too mean to pay for a childminder. Dragging around the country. Oh, aren't you good? Oh, you're good. Have you changed a nappy? And I'd say, no, no, this one still fits. When she grows out of it, oh, this is 0 to 3 months. When she grows out of it, I'll buy her a new one.
Good at these things. Actually, you may wonder why Andy Hamilton hasn't been on this series. He's at home nursing our child. I say nursing, he's got to find her first. She fell into a packet of jelly babies. We've no idea where she's got to. So. Sweet thought, isn't it? Little tiny thing with a beard. What do we think about this, boys, about staying home? Daniel, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I think it's very, very good news for both the pizza industry and,
yes,
for, yeah, and for the cartoon networks, because it's not, their share price has gone soaring since Joe Swinson said that all the men are going to be looking after the children rather than the women.
This nice week that the government is having, and
yeah,
it's all kind of got a bit sort of liberal and everything's being seen through the merciless prism of equality, I wonder if it's like a pincer movement, that on the one side it's the Republicans in America losing so badly with their very right-wing social policies, and then on the other side is Borgen.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things are kind of making a pincer movement around the UK and forcing this government, against its will, to introduce lots of liberal, nice policies.
What is Borgen?
It's a Danish...
Yeah.
Crisp bread?
I was going to say Danish cartoon then, but I don't know where that came from. It's a Danish drama about politics.
Okay.
It's like the sort of Danish West Wing.
Yeah. Okay.
And with a sort of a program about who takes over the environment ministry, but in Danish.
Yes.
Yeah. And in fact, as part of
watching
that, well, it's very popular. It's hugely popular in our house, obviously.
I should think you're literally, you represent in tiny form the precise demographic of Borgen.
Katie, you are meddling with Vikings more dangerous than you can possibly control. You are about to unleash the power of Thor.
Do you know what, bizarrely, remember when there was those cartoons that the Danish newspapers had done, those cartoons that some Islamists found offensive? Bizarrely, when I was at university, I was one of the first of only three people to study Muslim law. And when they were looking for somebody who was Danish, who knew about Muslim law and who also knew about comedy, and if you did a Venn diagram, I was it. I was the only person, I think, on the planet, actually, who fulfilled all of those things.
You should have become a cartoonist, really.
I immediately should have done, yes, but I sadly didn't go for it.
When I was at university, there was someone who was doing a master's on a subject so specific and complicated that they looked for ages for an external examiner to mark it, and they found that he was the only person qualified to mark it.
The Coalition has announced plans for a major overhaul of family law, the Children and Families Bill. Oh, don't you think Children and Families Bill sounds like a really lovely chap? Sounds like a really nice man. Oh, you want to get Children and Families Bill over? He'll look after the kids. Business Minister Joe Swinson said the perception that it's a mother's role to stay at home and bring up children will be shattered, presumably because it'll be up all night with a crying baby. In the Commons, the plans were met by cheers from a figure dressed as Spider-Man chained to the radiator. You know, I miss Fathers for Justice. If only for that brief second we used to go, blimey, Batman's let himself go. Two points to Jeremy. Katie, whose hunch about where to dig has paid off royally?
I think this will be Richard III,
yeah,
who, the man under the car park.
Yeah.
Which is very exciting. And the thing that I didn't realise until all this came out is how passionate the Richard III... societies are. I had no idea. But there are all these societies that are obsessed with Richard III being rehabilitated and his reputation. They feel that he's been hard done by history. I mean, I know people think that, but I didn't realise there were societies that were just devoted to this. And there's this one lady who was the subject of a documentary, and when she walked across the car park, sort of had a premonition, and then when she went back the next time, there was a big R there or something. And on that basis, they began to dig. I'm sure there's more to it than that.
Wow.
And they remodeled his head. And she was so overcome with emotion. I mean, I honestly thought she was going to kiss him.
She was slightly obsessive, wasn't she?
Yes, I mean, it was as if they were living in the same period in history and, you know, they were kind of estranged lovers who had finally been reunited via a Leicester car park. It was sort of very touching and also extraordinarily disturbing.
What occurred to me is he had 10 wounds.
Hmm.
He must have been a terrible parker. Like, my My theory about how he ended up there is that he hit his head on that barrier, you know, with the maximum headroom, because he was on a horse, obviously, at the time.
I did a lot of my education in the United States. I went to high school in New York, and we had a wonderful history teacher with a very thick Brooklyn accent. And I remember talking about Richard the Toad. You want to read about Richard the Toad? He's fantastic. And there was a rather stupid boy in my class, and he came up to me afterwards and said, "Who the hell was that Dick the Shit?"
I'm just thinking how much better the film Goodfellas could have been if they'd had a lengthy discussion about the Wars of the Roses.
And why are they burying him in a cathedral? Why are, he's a Catholic, if he came before Henry VIII. Shouldn't they bury him in a Catholic church?
Yeah.
Mm. I'm only a Jew, so I don't know.
No, it's a very...
Not only, Danny.
Not only.
Also, they're allowed to have a view. Welcome.
Like... We're allowed to have a view now.
Not in Leicester. Richard de Montfort, who is everything in Leicester is named after, banned the Jews from Leicester. I'm not sure if that's been
revoked.
I think
it was revoked. His brother Simon.
Oh, Simon de Montfort. He captured the king, didn't he? Simon de Montfort? Yeah. They had a war because the king wasn't carrying out the rules as laid down in the Magna Carta, isn't that right? So he'd got the ump and went down to Lewis, I believe, and they captured the king.
You know when you said that, why was Michael Gove trying to improve school teaching? This conversation.
A team from the University of Leicester has confirmed that a skeleton found underneath a council car park is that of Richard III, the last Plantagenet King of England, who died in 1485 at the Battle of Bosworth Field. The skeleton had several sword wounds, a curved spine, and a vast collection of court summonses for unpaid parking fines. Channel 4 broadcast a documentary about newly discovered details of Richard III's life on Monday night. The BBC were going to have their own last month, but it clashed with a special Christmas tribute they had planned for him. Was found in a Leicester car park not far from the local Tesco, so he got that horse after all. Oh, 2 points to Katie. Daniel, why aren't men and women worlds apart?
Oh, well, there's been a new study that suggests that unlike the theory that says men are from Mars and women are from Venus, actually male and female characteristics don't differ that much. And they've studied 13,300 men and women, 120 characteristics, and discovered there was no statistically significant difference between them. So basically the theory behind that book, which never struck me as very scientific in the first place, has been debunked. That main idea there was that men are supposed to listen and not solve problems, which makes Ed Miliband the perfect man. I claim my 2 points.
Yes! Very good. 2 extra points to Daniel. Very, very good. And also, it was curious, wasn't it? Apparently, it's why homosexual couples have the same rows as heterosexual couples, albeit, you know, in better decorated homes, but... Apparently we all row about exactly the same things.
The theories only work when one group of people are being oppressed. That all those sort of theories go once everyone's being seen through the merciless prism of equality, because then people's true individual characteristics come through. It's all very well to say, during a time where it's illegal for women to own property, it's obvious that men can say, well, women are terrible at owning property. They always mess it up. That's the main difference between men and women, is men are good at owning property and women are terrible at owning property. And then once everyone can own property and everyone's perfectly good about it, all the differences start to disappear, don't they?
I think that was the gist of the report, wasn't it? That men are almost as good as women. That's pretty much it. Phrasing.
There's an obsession with genetics at the moment. I mean, it's gone from everyone thinking everything was nurtured to people saying, no, everything's nature. And there's been a backlash against this report. People saying, well, anyone who's ever raised children will tell you that boys and girls are very, very different. And I think, well, no, anyone that's raised children knows that their children will forever bear the emotional scars of our ineptitude as parents. You can, children are completely conditioned. People think, well, you raise a boy and a girl equally. You don't, because as soon as you meet someone's baby, you say, boy or girl. Why do you need to know? The child is a month old. What plans are you making? That, you know, what? It doesn't make any difference. But it does, because you will speak to them completely differently. If you say to a person, it's a girl, they'll say, oh, aren't you beautiful princess? Oh, look at your lovely leg. I expect you'll be a ballet dancer. And if you then said to them, oh, no, I'm sorry, not girl. What is it? Boy, it's boy. And they'd say, oh, no, you don't want to be a ballet dancer. You've got big, strong football legs, haven't you? You want a gun to kill a foreigner, don't you?
I went to a toy shop only a few weeks ago and they only had Dr. Boy out costumes and Nurse Girl costumes. They didn't have a doctor costume for a girl.
That was a fetish shop, Katie.
Busted.
That was Anne Summers you were in.
This was... Mary Wollstonecraft in the 18th century wrote about this, about how even the toys that boys and girls have create that sort of thing that that you're talking about, you know, which is why it's so ridiculous. You see a girl pushing a buggy and that she's been given a little buggy and they're two. Oh, you're such a little girl pushing a buggy. And I think that's because that's what you've given them. She's not thinking, oh, well, I better get in practice. I live in Croydon, it won't be long now.
Writing in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, psychologists from Rochester University in America have concluded there is no evidence to back the claim that men and women think differently. The team concluded there was fundamentally no difference between the sexes after re-examining 13,300 individual questionnaires and realising that both the female and male researchers were equally bored. According to the study, men aren't from Mars and women aren't from Venus, in what was a massive breakthrough in gender psychology and a massive blow to Scientology.
Red men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
Have you?
Yes, I have.
What sort of thing does it recommend?
It has a lot of talk about men being like elastic bands and women being like waves.
But that is true.
And also it says that men... that men and women give points differently, don't they, of affection. So basically men score a point in large blocks, right. 20, 30, 40, and women do it one at a time, except for Chris Hune, who gives 3 points to his wife, basically. You see what I did there?
Yeah, it's very, very good. 2 points to Daniel. Mark, listen to this.
You gone fishing.
Ah, you know.
But there's a sign upon your door.
Uh-huh.
Gone fishing.
I'm real gone, man.
You ain't working anymore.
Could be.
There's your home.
Mark, who's voted to discard a fishy situation?
Oh, right, yes, I heard a bit about this on the radio. I think this most probably refers to the Women's Cricket World Cup that's taken place. No. Alternatively, it is that there is some sort of debate taking place in which the EU fishing stocks have been reallocated in some way or other because the agreements as they stood were not helpful to British fishing people.
So when you say there's been a debate, you mean that the European Parliament has unanimously voted? That's what you meant to say.
I'll blame someone for not following this story because it involves the European Parliament and Haddock, basically. And you expect him to know what it is just for this programme.
He did get very
on the radio and he was the minister responsible or something. Who would that have been? And he was very excited and very pleased with himself that he managed.
That'd be the Minister of Fish.
Minister of Fish. Do even you not know who that is?
Well, there was quite a good quote from the Scottish Fishermen's Federation chief executive, who's called Bertie Armstrong, and he said there is concern about how a discards ban would work in practice. Well, here's the thing, is instead of discarding, you don't. That's it. I could run the EU, really. I think it's... it did get a bit complicated, because you have to start legislating for each species of fish. The trick is to ignore the red herring. I think that's the...
So they've changed the rule because a lot of professional fishermen were upset that due to the quotas they have to throw back a lot of perfectly good catch.
Yeah.
So have they changed that now then?
The idea is you don't have to discard anymore. So they have, but there are certain rules.
That's good.
Yeah, it's a very good thing. There are certain rules. You should only eat Icelandic cod, you must buy pole and line caught tuna, you must pay no attention to Alex Salmon. There's lots of sort of rules.
And if someone breaks the rules too badly, do they get sent to The Hague?
Moving along. The European Parliament has unanimously voted to reform the common fisheries policy with the aim of protecting fish stocks and ending the practice of discarding edible fish overboard. This law regarding dead fish was passed by MEPs in Brussels this week. Slimy, scaly and with a glazed stare, seemed to reflect the futility of life. MEPs maintain they are useful members of the democratic process. At the moment, British fishermen throw overboard any fish they land that isn't already coated in a thick orange batter. Hugh Fernley Whittingstall is the head of a campaign called Fish Fight, which breeds fish to attack each other in brutal blood sport. Which is part of the reason all fish will be microchipped from 2016. What did we do before Wikipedia? It's a marvellous thing, isn't it? Ed Miliband quickly made political capital out of the situation by asking his mum if he could book tickets to see Doctor Who live. Before I reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
This is from a packet of coffee in Malawi. It says, "Our coffee and your health. Mzuzu coffee contributes the following to your body. Improves mental performance, alertness and athletic performance. Reduces the risk of liver cancer, diabetes and the organisation of gallstones. Protects from the development of Parkinson's disease and colds. Dear customer, through research, we have discovered that our coffee offers you more health benefits than pleasure."
Ms. Brand.
This is from Bob and Jill Davies in Reading, who saw this in the Telegraph property section, an advert for a property called Well Place Manor in Ipston. So we know what it's called and where it is. And the description is, "This period house is set in 10 acres of land and paddocks, including swimming pool, orchard, grass, tennis court and gardens designed by our own Bunny Guinness. The main house boasts period features such as oak and parquet floors, plus open fireplaces. To keep valuables out of sight, there is a safe and a gun locker hidden behind a bookcase in the living room."
Mr. Finkelstein.
So this is from Joe Jacobius and from a Sunday Times Culture on the 13th of January. At 7 o'clock, splash. Tom Daly helps celebrities learn how to dive as they battle for two places in next week's semi-final. The same day, pushing daisies. One half of a synchronised swimming duo is killed. Last in series.
Mr. Steele.
Right, I saw this in the Brighton Argus. Next week sees the start of the Chinese New Year, which will be the year of the snake. And one restaurant in Brighton is celebrating the occasion by offering a free meal to anyone who goes there on that day. The only stipulation is your family name must be Snake.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Katie have got 9 points, but this week's winners are Daniel and Mark with 11. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from The Economist sent in by Ian Robertson.
India's Foreign Investment Agency has recommended IKEA's £2 billion investment plan to open 25 stores in the country over 20 years. A cabinet committee is expected to give its final approval soon.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Katie Brand, Daniel Finkelstein and Mark Steele. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Roderick Crooks and Lucy Clark. With additional material by Laura Watson and Jack Bernhardt. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.